This week, we are joined by the creator of the Bitcoin community and the online learning platform School. Ted Carr has been in Bitcoin since 2017, through all the ups and downs, and today he's teaching thousands of online learners about Bitcoin in a high signal environment. Ted joins us to share his origin story, how video game economies taught him about Bitcoin, and so much more. I hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week we are joined by special guest Bitcoiner Ted Carr from School. Ted, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Pleasure.
So we were just chatting offline about your involvement with Bitcoin and the School community. We'll maybe go there in a little bit. Maybe before we start, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got here on the Bitcoin journey?
Yeah. I got into Bitcoin in, I think it was 2017. I think my first buy-in was like $1,200. So to see it go from 1200 when I first got into like 120 grand, that's like, 10X would be 12 grand, right? So 100X, is that the math on that? That was like a lot of people celebrated when it hit 100 grand, but I really celebrated when it hit 120 grand. I'm like, that's fucking crazy. So I got in a long, long time ago, but like most people, just made a ton of mistakes in the early days. I probably have a bunch of Bitcoin floating around in different wallets. So I don't even know where the hell they are. Or don't remember the seed phrases to most of them, you know, because I just built up so many of them. There was like no big YouTube channels back then talking about Bitcoin. There was no Michael Saylor back then. The best I had was Andreas Antonopoulos, thank God. But there just weren't enough people to learn from their mistakes. So I made a lot of mistakes myself. And one of them was thinking, oh, what I'll do to keep my Bitcoin secure, I'll just put my Bitcoin on a whole bunch of different exchanges. And I'll make every username different, every password different. And I'll remember the seed phrases. It's like, no, dude, the brain doesn't really work that way. So one after another, exchanges either got hacked or got shut down. Some of them would be like, oh, we don't operate in Canada anymore. And then some of them would be like, oh, I didn't write down that seed phrase. I just lost a bunch of Bitcoin in the early days, but kept buying. I've never sold any Bitcoin for cash ever. I've just only bought. Because in Canada, as you may know, in the early days, especially even with Coinbase, when Coinbase first came out, you couldn't send money back to your bank though. It was only buying in. There was no taking money out. So I just accepted the fact that, oh, this is not something that you sell. It's not something that you convert to fiat. You convert fiat to Bitcoin, but you don't convert back. So I've never converted back. I've bought stuff with Bitcoin over the years, like when I've had to, because I was in Russia one time. I couldn't send money from my Canadian bank to go buy this big event that I wanted to attend. So I just bought with Bitcoin. And I've taken loans out against my Bitcoin with Ledin. Shout out Ledin, incredible company. But I've never converted to fiat. So from 2017 to now, I've only bought Bitcoin. And I don't have much money in my bank account. It all goes to Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's so cool. You continue to buy. I know. So maybe as like sort of some background for the listeners. You're involved with School. And maybe it could be good just to... What is School?
School is an online community platform. It's basically a really good replacement for Facebook groups. That's like the shortest way to put it,
Yeah, that was very short. So I recently joined School. Some of my friends locally here where I live are involved in the School community and referred me. I ended up in the Bitcoin group in School that you started. And I was just, I'm like, okay, so what's this Bitcoin group going to be all about? And saw from your post, I'm like, okay, so Ted's fairly far down the rabbit hole. Ted knows what's up. And I was just really interested in, you know, there's maybe 1,200 people in this group getting some really good Bitcoin coaching.
Yeah, I get asked about Bitcoin often, especially when the price runs up. Whenever the price is green for a few weeks, I get more and more text messages and messages from people, as I'm sure you do too. And I just, as opposed to keep repeating myself and answering the same questions over and over, I'm just like, dude, everything I know about Bitcoin is in this group. Just go to theschool.com/Bitcoin. It's all there. All the best videos I've ever watched, all the best interviews I've ever watched, all the best books I've ever read, all the best podcasts, they're all in that School community. So it's just like a central hub where I just keep dumping all the best stuff that I find. about Bitcoin.
And so, yeah, I mean, you can see in there from going back to 2017 and never having sold, you've learned a lot of stuff along the way. You've got, you know, some good tips on self-custody. And yeah, tell like, what were some of your big, you know, milestones along the Bitcoin journey, like that got you to the place that you are now with how you operate as a Bitcoiner?
I guess like one of the big milestones is or was just getting off exchanges and doing cold storage. That was such a scary feat because exchanges are so simple. Like I just needed username and password and there's my Bitcoin, or so I thought. And then like you have this aha moment. Bitcoin is very philosophical. I'm sure you've realized like there's many, many hundreds or thousands of like aha moments you have. And one of the aha moments I had was, wait a minute, like that's actually not my Bitcoin on the screen. Yeah, it's my username. Yeah, it's like my account on the exchange, but that's not my Bitcoin. It says I have this much Bitcoin, but that's just an IOU. I don't even know if they have that Bitcoin. If I go to withdraw it, it might not be there. My account could get shut down. There's nothing I can do about it. It's not actually my Bitcoin. And so I was like, well, I want it to be my Bitcoin. So how do I do that? And the only way to do it is through cold storage. And so I started with a Nano Ledger, and then I upgraded to a Trezor, and now I've upgraded to a cold card. Just kept going more and more down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that was kind of the mark when I saw some of your posts. I'm like, okay, Ted really knows what's going on, because you were explaining to people about that your personal setup is a cold card. Actually, I haven't, we don't talk a ton about, you know, personal Bitcoin setups on the show. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting place to go, maybe. There you go. So that's a pretty fancy wallet.
Beautiful wallet. Highly recommend. You know, it's funny with the cold card too, is I was so excited about the fact that it could be air gapped with a micro SD card. And let's see these little micro SD cards. And so when I first got the cold card, I was like, okay, sweet. I'm gonna buy these batteries. I'm gonna buy this SD card. And then I'm like, well, where do I store the SD card? Because if you stick it in, if you stick this in, it like sticks out. Like you can't just travel with the SD card sticking out of your cold card. Doesn't like punch in all the way, you know? And then I looked on the back and I found these two little slits, and you can actually store the SD card in the slit. And so when you put the cover back on, you can safely travel with the SD cards right there in the battery pack. I had no idea that until I was tinkering around and found that. So shout out Cold Card for engineering that. But you know, it's funny, again, I was excited about the air gap security, and then I fell in love with the convenience of the QR code scanner. It's got a camera that goes scan and then scan. I'm like, oh, they're way better than SD. I don't even use the SDs anymore.
Yeah, I think they make the best wallets. They make the best hardware for sure. And it's a little bit off the beaten path. I'm always trying to convince friends of mine to move away from Ledger as an example, without just because of the data breaches. There's been, you know, I think there's been a few problems, and you know, among other things, some of their practices around external wallet recovery is
like, let us hold your keys for you. No thanks. So yeah, cold cards, definitely. I think BitKey is a good option as well for a lot of people.
Yeah, I haven't used the BitKey wallet, but
yeah, at least the one issue I found with Cold Card, like it's hard to wrap your head around using it, but like there's no, so you have the hardware, but there's no software for Cold Card, right? So you have to then learn, let's say, Sparrow, which looks like it's built in the 1990s. It's so unbelievably, unnecessarily ugly. So it kind of cringes you out every time you look at it. Like, we're filming this on Riverside, right? Riverside's beautiful. You go to school.com, you school, it's beautiful. You go to any website, even Google, for the most part, it's quite beautiful. Sparrow's ugly. And so every time you're looking at your Bitcoin, you're like, ooh, like, it's not nice to look at visually. Whereas Trezor, their ledger. They've got their built-in software. It looks beautiful. BitKey, I believe, has this own built-in software as well. Beautiful. So that's one thing you got to wrap your head around when using ColdCard is like there's no continuity between hardware and software.
Yeah, and I think it's partly right because the ColdCard, they're just trying to remove sort of all the points of failure on the devices, right? It's like even air gapping. I'm not sure that term has even really been mentioned properly on the show before. And air gapping is basically generating a seed phrase without it ever actually being online.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah, this has never been plugged into the computer before. And even if it does get plugged in, this is disabled. So like no power is getting sent through. There's no data getting sent through. So that's what's so wild about this is like this generates a seed phrase, like generates the 12 words on here, and then they're stored on here. And you can easily generate a 13th word or a 25th word on here. And so without ever connecting to the computer, you can send and receive Bitcoin. But then again, you're like, okay, well, if I receive Bitcoin to the ColdCard, like, is the Bitcoin on the ColdCard? Like, well, no, it's just, it's connected to those 12 or 24 words, you know? It's such a cool concept. Like, even if someone steals this or I lose this, I don't lose the Bitcoin. This is just like,
yeah, I think it's a really common misconception. People think that Bitcoins are stored on Bitcoin wallets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. Like, if I steal your physical wallet, I get the money. But someone can steal my Bitcoin wallet and not have any money. Yeah, exactly. The Bitcoin's not stored on that. But one of the best analogies I've heard is like the 12 words, the 24 words are really coordinates on a map. So you technically don't actually own Bitcoin, period. You just have the coordinates. That was a massive aha moment. Oh, wait, you can't own Bitcoin. I've actually uploaded that video to the school community. Yeah, there's no ownership. It's just like, because you can't own 24 words.
Yeah, all the words give you the ability to move the Bitcoin that are implied to be at that address.
Yep, exactly. So cool. It's like, I have the coordinates and you don't.
To get philosophical, I mean, the interesting thing about it is, at the same time, you could say that Bitcoin is maybe actually the only thing that you can actually own. Because all other kinds of ownership are not as tidy.
Yeah, it's the paradox of like ownership and non-ownership. Because again, like you can't legally say, I own these 24 words. It's like, no, dude, they're in the dictionary. Like you don't own the words. But those words, like you said, give you the ability to sign transactions and send transactions. So it feels like ownership in a way, but it's more of like a knowing. You know where the money is. You don't own the money, but you know where it is. That's more of what it is, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the flip side is like a lot of people think they own their homes, but if you don't pay your property taxes, they will take your home and sell it. You know, as conditional ownership. That's what I would say is like physical things. The ownership of physical things is more of like a conditional ownership. Your ability to prove that you own something. Whereas with Bitcoin, having the 24 words is proof of ownership.
Yeah, proof of ownership. Again, that word ownership to me is like, I guess you go to define like how would you define ownership? Would you define ownership?
In the case of money is whether or not you're able to spend it.
You know what the Rye Stones, right? On that island, what was it? Yap Island or something? Yeah, Yap Island. So it's like their ownership was like, well, Scott told everybody in the community that's his stone. Everyone in the community agreed that's his stone. So therefore, that's Scott's stone, right? So their ownership, like everybody had access to the rock. Everyone could go and touch it. But again, you were the only one able to spend it because we all agreed that you were allowed to spend it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've read Bitcoin Standard like most people who probably listen to the show, and I still have a hard time understanding how the Yap economy worked with these stones that didn't move.
It was just like they had big communal meetings every time one was going to be moved. So the whole community would get together and everyone's like, all right. So like the leader of the pack or tribe or whatever was like, all right, guys, Scott said he's going to give Bob that stone in exchange for his farm. It's like, cool. Now we all agree Scott doesn't own that rock and Bob owns the rock. Agreed? Agreed. Cool. And everyone just would remember like, nope, that's like everyone, that's Bob Stone. So yeah, I guess like back to ownership is like your ability to spend the money is therefore you own it. But Like in certain objects, like, okay, your house, sure. If you don't pay property taxes on it, it gets taken away from you. Most people still call it house ownership though, right? Okay, so you own it, but there's a fee you have to keep paying. Okay, we can wrap our heads around that. But like, how about like my phone? I own my phone. I bought it outright, paid in full. I own the phone. And again, I physically have it. And then with Bitcoin, because there is no physical having of it, it's more of a knowing. Like I know my 12 words. So it's maybe like an invisible ownership or something. But even then, like, you can't fucking own 12 words. I just know them. I know them and nobody else does. So maybe it's like transcending from like owning something to just like knowing something. Like, I know where my I know my money and you don't.
Yeah, it's wild. The you know, it's such a there are so many aspects of Bitcoin that are so different, that work so differently from the way we've been interacting with money and ownership, possession, wealth. A lot of different things to bite off all at once.
Oh yeah, dude. It's genuinely endless. I'll probably be studying this for the next 20 years. Well, yeah.
So you watched Bitcoin go from 100x for you. What was it? Did you have like a big light bulb moment? Like when did you start to really understand sort of the depth of Bitcoin innovation? Or,
oh dude, even recently I watched this really good YouTube video. I think I put it in the school community, where the guy broke down like 5 or 6 different problems that Satoshi had to solve in order for Bitcoin to actually be a thing. And like, that was a very, oh man, if we could like link it in the show notes or something, I'll definitely find it and send it to you. It's such a cool video. And I listened to that just like a couple weeks ago. I was like, or maybe like a month ago, I was like, holy crap, this is genuinely like, I know Saylor talks about Satoshi being similar to the guy who created Fire, Prometheus or something, right? About how genuinely amazing Satoshi is, or the group of Satoshi, I mean, it's a group of people, but like the amount of problems I had to get solved for Bitcoin to be a thing is so freaking cool. And I only had that flash of insight like a month ago as I was listening to this YouTube video. I took for granted all the problems I had to get solved. I'm like, yeah, cryptography and yeah, this and that, whatever. But no, like everything from like the double spend problem to even like the immaculate conception aspect of like, no one knows who he is, and that's a good thing. Or she is, or they are, right? But one of my earliest aha moments, one of my earliest insights about Bitcoin was as soon as I found out that it was finite by code and that would never get changed, even though I knew that it was digital and you could never touch it, I knew that because it was finite, that alone would make it be worth something. Because the only reason I knew that was because growing up, I played a computer game called RuneScape. And RuneScape had like this built-in in-game economy where there's millions of players buying and selling stuff all the time. And just like in the real world, money kept getting printed. So in RuneScape, coins kept getting created. Every time you kill a goblin, new coins. Every time you complete a quest, a wizard gives you some coins. So coins were always being issued into the game. So over time, you could stack up a bunch of money just by playing the game. Whereas certain items like these Santa hats and these party hats, they only got dropped once on Christmas and on New Year's. That was it. So there's a finite amount of these Santa hats and finite amount of these party hats. And when they first got introduced into the game, everyone's like, whoop-de-doo, it's a freaking Santa hat. What do you do with it? Wear it? Does nothing. Doesn't protect you. Doesn't do anything. It's just a Santa hat. Party hat, same thing. They were worth just a couple gold coins each. In fact, people dropped them. People gave them away for free. They didn't even want them. They're garbage. But they were finite. So over time, Santa hats and party hats kept going up and up and up and up and up in price, because just there was less and less of them over time because people kept dying. People lost their accounts. People accidentally died with the party hats on. And so there was less and less party hats over time, less and less Santa hats over time, but more and more fiat in the game, more and more gold coins in the game. And so I grew up with that in-game economy of RuneScape. I grew up with the finite Santa hats and party hats going up in price from a couple gold coins to a couple hundred gold coins to a couple thousand gold coins each to a couple million gold coins each to now, as of this recording, October 24th, 2025, those Santa hats and party hats in the game are worth hundreds of billions of gold coins. And it's like, by the time I quit the game, they're already worth hundreds of millions. So I was like, oh, I've already experienced what it's like to buy and hold these worthless Santa hats and these worthless party hats. And now I'm just doing the same thing. I'm going to play the same game I played at RuneScape. I'm going to play with Bitcoin. I look at Bitcoin like a party hat, like a Bitcoin like a Santa hat. It's finite. Doesn't do anything. Whoop de doo. Okay, I'll hold it then. You don't think it has any value? Fine, give me yours.
I love that. Yeah, you're not the first guest to share how like a video game economy taught that lesson there. One of my, a great friend of mine, Dave Bradley, who's been on the show a few times, talks a lot about the Stone of Jordan. That was a, I think it was a World of Warcraft item. And it's exactly the same thing, right? There's the rarity and the sort of relationship between these assets becoming like desirable in the game, whereas like the aha thing. And but I've never actually heard somebody say that exactly like you just did, where now you're just basically playing that game in real life. And so you've been stacking and I've seen your posts. You plan on stacking. You're buying forever. You're buying the top forever.
Yeah, I buy regardless of the price. I'm so glad I was able to have this paradigm shift. I used to be chronically unhappy with when I bought, because whenever the price would go up, I'd be like, oh, fuck, it's more expensive now. And then whenever the price would go down, I'd be like, oh, my net worth has gone down now. Whereas now, I flip that. When the price goes down, I'm like, fuck yeah, it's on sale. Let's go. Please stay low. Please go lower. I love dips. I want crashes. I want down, down, down as much as possible. I love downward pressure. Whenever the price goes up, I think, oh, my net worth is at an all-time high. My net worth is going up. Like when price goes up, I'm richer. When price goes down, I get a discount on buying my favorite thing. I cashed in some credit card points the other day. I didn't even know I was collecting points on my credit card. I had like a whole bunch of points to cash in. And like, what do you want to spend it on? I checked out all these different gift cards I could buy. I'm like, Amazon, no, Uber, no, like, I don't want any of this crap. And then I'm like, can I just use the money? Can I just use the points to like give myself fiat so I can buy more Bitcoin? So I just exchanged all my credit card points for fiat and immediately went and bought Bitcoin with it. So I exchanged my credit card points for Bitcoin. It's like the only thing I want to buy.
So I get this question. I actually got this question today in a different conversation I was having earlier. Is there some point in your life where you sell your Bitcoin? Like, what's the point of accumulating, like, you know, in your mind?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like I said earlier in the call, I don't see the point in selling, but I do see you need fiat to buy stuff as of this moment. Or at least sometimes you need fiat. Other times you can buy Bitcoin. But I have learned how to get fiat from Bitcoin without selling it. And I just take out loans against it using Ledin. So pretty much all the money in my bank account right now is money that I have because I just took out a nice big loan against my Bitcoin. And the first thing I bought when I took out money against Bitcoin? Yeah. I just bought more Bitcoin because it's become such a habit. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm buying Bitcoin with the money that I'm taking out against the Bitcoin. But yeah, it's like, it's it. If you ever need cash, just take out loans against your Bitcoin. The only exception for that, so Ledin, for example, and a lot of lending companies, they give you 50% LTV. So if you give them one Bitcoin right now, as of this recording, they'll give you like, whatever, 55 grand or something, right? But if you want that full 110 grand or whatever Bitcoin's worth, the only time it would make sense to sell it, in my opinion, is to save a life, your own life, mom's life, your dad's life, your best friend's life, your wife's life, like your kid's life, in the hospital, emergency. To me, it's the only time it like logically makes sense to sell the Bitcoin. It's to stay alive, to stay in the game. Other than that, you know, you might as well just take out loans against it. You still get 50% of the value and you get to keep your coin.
Not a bad strategy.
And again, I've worked this logic so many times in my head. I'm like, wait a minute. So Ledin, let's say, charges you 12%, right? 12% interest. If you know, or if you believe Bitcoin is going to go up at least 20% a year, that's like on the low end, at least 20% a year, then you're still 8% profit. You're still an 8% profit.
Yeah, I think this logic applies a lot of different. I've had people ask me about selling some of their Bitcoin to pay down debt or a line of credit, you know, where the interest rates are actually even much lower. You know, somebody's paying 4% or 8% on a line of credit. They want to sell their Bitcoin to pay it off. And the Bitcoin, you know, has been compounding at 30 or 40%. And, you know, there's, so yeah, I agree with you, you know, like there are scenarios that make sense, but where avoidable if possible. Holding on for dear life.
One of the dumbest things I've ever done in my life as a Bitcoiner is get out of debt. I remember the instant regret I felt. I went from feeling relief to paying off the debt to feeling like an absolute idiot 24 hours later. I had like 60 grand of something of debt because I took a bought a Tesla when it first came out, bought like a 2019 Model 3 Performance for like 90 grand Canadian. It was like 88 grand or something. And I had paid off whatever, 30 grand worth. So I still had 60K left on the credit card. And it was only like 3% interest or something. But I still had like 60K of debt. Debt. That word is so nasty. It feels like I'm like slapping you and I say it to you. Debt, you know? And I just wanted to get rid of the freaking debt. Because all my life I've been programmed, brainwashed to be like debt-free, debt-free, debt-free. And so I paid it off all in one fell swoop. Like, boom, gone. Get rid of that debt. Because we had a big month in business. Boom, 60 grand profit. Pay off the credit card, done. I felt so good. I even texted my parents. I'm like, guys, look, no more credit card debt. No more car loan debt. I'm free. It's like, ah. And then I thought about it. I'm like, wait a minute. I just gave 60 grand away that I could have put in Bitcoin. What an idiot. Like 60 grand in Bitcoin, if that goes up by like 10% even, I can just, you know, pay off the credit card slowly, $1,000 a month like I'd been doing for a long time, no stress. But I had such programming, such deep brainwashing in me that like was playing my emotional cords to pay it off. But then the next day I was like, no, that was a fucking dumb move. And I couldn't undo it. You can't go back. Like, let me get back into debt. They won't let you. It's like, once you pay it off, you're done. That 3% doesn't exist anymore. Now it's like higher percentage. So yeah, one of the dumbest things I've ever done as a Bitcoin is get out of debt. I should have just stayed in debt. It's all good. Debt is fine if you are in Bitcoin and you have some income coming in.
Yeah. Like you said, many lessons. I've in the travels of different guests we've had on the show, you know, another one of these things is like for people who got into buying Bitcoin earlier, you know, especially like really earlier, you should have like hundreds of Bitcoin by now or like, and there's just so many pitfalls, right? And it's just the only thing that changes. Well, I mean, I guess the kind of pitfalls changes, but it's almost like it's normal for most people, regardless of when they start, that they have to pay a Bitcoin donation to the tuition of Bitcoin University of learning along the way. I know I definitely, made some very painful mistakes. I was in the class of 2020. So I started and sort of like rode 2021 and I was trying to trade my way and outperform Bitcoin. That was my biggest mistake was,
I should probably write a school post about this, but just like all like the top 10 or top 20 most commonly made mistakes that you should probably avoid. And this would be a culmination of things I've seen other people do and things I've done myself, most of which I've done myself, like also tried to trade it.
If I had to press you for your top three.
Top three mistakes? Probably one of them getting out of debt. That's like 60 grand gone right there. It's like, feels like it's like stolen from me, looking back. Another one was keeping money on exchanges. And then third mistake, this might not be it, but in the moment, I might just go with trading because trading is very attractive to a lot of people. And I thought I legitimately cracked the code when I began trading because I made a very large amount of money in a very short period of time, followed by losing it all in a very short period of time. But I thought I was like the smartest guy in the world, dude. Here's my formula, okay? And I swear to God, I thought I invented this, okay? So you look at the charts. And whenever it goes up, you sell. And whenever it goes down, you buy. So you buy low and you sell high. And I did that for a few days. And I look, and because the charts were like this, I'm like, holy crap. Like every time it goes down, I just buy it. And when it goes back up, I just sell it. I'm keep making profit every time. This is incredible. And, what I did is I converted my Bitcoin into other shit coins that were way more volatile. So I had way more like leeway. I didn't know about leverage or anything back then, thank God. But I did know about shit coins. And shit coins had crazy volatility. But whenever there was like long periods of sideways motion, it was so easy to legitimately buy low and sell high because it kept rebounding from high to low to low to high, blah, blah, blah. So I made a tremendous amount of money. Like, this is incredible. This is so easy. And then one day, you buy low and it just keeps going lower, 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 and never returns. Like, oh, That was my one of my biggest tuitions I paid, shitcoin university. So trading, stupid
trading. Bitcoin only. Yeah. Was that when you learned it was Bitcoin only, or?
When did I learn it was Bitcoin only? That was when I learned not to trade. And then probably, I guess, maybe during like that Luna era, where there were so many people who were so hardcore into Luna, so hardcore, like cult-like, and smart people, people I respected. I didn't know anything about it. I was just watching from the sidelines. Thank God. Because by that point, I was already pretty much convinced Bitcoin was the way. But then when I saw Luna go down and out, I was like, oh, I was right. Or, oh, the people who told me Bitcoin only were right, at least. I won't take credit for being right. But the people who told me Bitcoin only, they were correct. So yay, Team Bitcoin again. That was, I guess, the nail in the coffin for me, just watching that shit crash. And now I look at everything like through that lens of Luna. Like I look at XRP through the lens of Luna. I look at Ethereum through the lens of Luna. I'm like, I look at ADA, Cardano through that lens. Like, could they go up? Yeah, but there's also a very high likelihood that they go down. Forever.
And what's the likelihood that they'll go up in Bitcoin terms over any meaningful period of time?
It's genuinely like a mystery box. Like you don't know. And so it's like if I come to you and say, hey, here's a box called Bitcoin, and you know with 99% certainty it's going to go up at least 20% a year over the next 20 years. Minimum. Like you know this box has that in it, right? 20% a year for 20 years. Minimum. But we could be seeing 30, 40, 50, whatever. Let's just say 20% for 20 years. Then you get this mystery box, which could do nothing. It could go down and be gone forever, like lose it all. Or yeah, it could also go up 10%, 20%, maybe 30% a year for the next 20 years. Highly unlikely, but which box do you want? It's like, I'm taking the guaranteed 20%. That's how I look at these shitcoins. The mystery boxes. It's like, I'm not going to play that game of like, what's in the mystery box? I don't care. I just want the good stuff.
I mean, and going back to your early analogy, it's kind of like the really rare item in RuneScape versus the regular money that they just make out of thin air.
100%, dude. Like I said, I've already played this game. I already know what's going to happen. Like, it's knowing at this point. That's what I said earlier, but like owning the money versus like knowing. It's like, this is just as much of a knowing as I know my 12 words, I know my 24 words. I also know Bitcoin's going to go up because it's finite. I don't know if you can find an example in human history where there's been a globally desired thing that's finite that does not go up in price. I don't think that's possible. I think like humans naturally will want to accumulate more and more and more of it. I mean, think how smart Michael Saylor is, right? He's one smart guy. He's one smart guy out of thousands of really smart guys. Look at BlackRock CEO, Mr. Fink, extremely smart guy, especially when it comes to money. Smarter than you and I likely will, I'll speak on your behalf. Smarter than I'll ever be.
I'm not that smart.
Smarter than I'll ever be. And what is he spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on? What's been the most successful ETF they've ever launched? What's the most successful ETF ever launched in human history? The Bitcoin one. Like, these are the smartest people in the world when it comes to money. Like, you heard of fiat? You know where the smartest people with fiat are putting their money? The richest people with fiat? They're putting in a Bitcoin. It's like, when is that going to click for people? It's like, if you admit these people are smarter than you, why won't you just do what they do? I remember this was a fascinating conversation. I had a friend and he went to some billionaire meetup. He paid like 10 grand to go to a billionaire meetup for one day to go learn from a bunch of billionaire investors. And at this meetup, they said, if you can find an asset that's going to give you 7 to 8% a year, go all in on that asset. That's incredible. And so he came back from the event, came back from this billionaire event, and I asked him for his couple key takeaways. And he's like, okay, these are my two key takeaways. Number one, they said, if you can find an asset that's going to give you 7 to 8% a year, go all in. That was number one key takeaway. He said the second key takeaway was, look at whatever BlackRock is doing and do the same thing. And so I'm looking at him, I'm like, dude, BlackRock's buying Bitcoin and Bitcoin's going up way more than 7 to 8% a year. So it's like, even forget the first key takeaway of 7 to 8% a year. If the only key takeaway is do what BlackRock's doing, then you should be buying Bitcoin.
The cheat code. Bitcoin is the ultimate cheat code.
Yeah. Going back to the RuneScape thing one more time, it's like, that is just a simulator. it's an economy simulator. That's why I look at RuneScape now. These are real human beings of all ages. There's 30, 40, 50-year-olds playing RuneScape. There's 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds playing RuneScape. 12-year-olds playing RuneScape. And there's fiat being pumped in, and there's finite items. Go. See what happens. Well, it turns out the finite items go up, even though they're useless. You can say Bitcoin's useless. You can say Bitcoin is just code. Well, yeah, well, so are these party hats. So are these Santa hats. It's just code. But people, not only will people pay in-game fiat coins for these party hats, but these party hats will sell on like eBay as well. Like people will like pay real money for the digital version of it. It's illegal in RuneScape, but people do it anyway. They're like, oh, I'll take cash for this digital party hat. So yeah, again, it's a simulator. And as the RuneScape's not just one, like you said, World of Warcraft's another example of that too. It's an economy simulator. It's like, what happens when you introduce finite items that get chased by infinite capital? The finite items go up. It's just what happens. Like, it's just science. It's like biology. You know? Dude, Pokemon cards, same thing. Oh, how come the rarer cards are worth more? Maybe because they're rarer? Baseball cards. How come the rarest baseball cards are worth the most? Maybe because they're the rarest? Like, it's so obvious when you, like, have these sort of conversations, but then all of a sudden Bitcoin's like, oh, I don't understand it, therefore it can't be correct. I don't understand it, therefore it must be a scam. That was my introduction to Bitcoin, by the way. My sister bought some, $500. And my immediate reaction was, I don't understand it, so therefore my sister's an idiot, and she got scammed. Her boyfriend convinced her to buy Bitcoin. And he got it for $250. Now she's buying it for double the price. What a moron. She should have got in at $250, but she didn't. Like, legit, I was like angry at her. And I'm like, wow, she got taken advantage of. I felt so bad. I'm like, wow, she knows nothing about money. And she didn't know anything about money, but at least she got Bitcoin. And then she put it in Mt. Gox, and then poof, gone. So that's what you do, though, at that age, right? You put it in Mt. Gox when you're, how old was she? She was probably like, I don't know, 20 or something at that time. Young and dumb, but at least she had Bitcoin. Not anymore. Well, she ended up rebuying later, but yeah, painful for her to rebuy. But yeah, back to the economy simulator. It's like, if you're wondering what's going to happen, just go look at these games. They've already proven it. Look at Pokemon cards, look at baseball cards. Rare equals worth more. Biology.
This has been fun, Ted. Maybe we'll wrap there. Thanks for coming on. For people who might want to find you, maybe a plug for school, or
yeah, just go to school.com/Bitcoin, join the community. One of the reasons I created it was I saw the Reddit forum. That's where I used to go for all my Bitcoin news. And I figured I'd just kind of create the school version of that. So there we are.
Yeah. And so it's free to sign up, right? And I will say, like, for people who are looking for a great, you know, you've got some clear guidelines in there. It's so people understand what they're going to get, and the content is high quality.
It's mostly because it's not my content. I just keep dumping all the best. It basically, we should rename it, call it the best of Bitcoin. And it's just like every time I find something that's golden, I throw it in there. That's why it's so good, because none of it's mine.
Very cool. Well, we'll look forward to more of your work on there. And thanks again for coming on. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in. Hope to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. to Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.